Guys, today is podcast number 2, and if you are watching over on YouTube, this is going to be a lot more of a chilled, unedited chat rather than a edited production video, if that makes sense. So I am going to be talking about something today that I feel very passionate about, I suffer with myself on an almost daily basis, and something I don't think is understood or talked about enough. We're all aware of it and we all do talk about it, but I don't think that people who don't struggle fully understand. And that topic is going to be suicide. I do want to put a trigger warning here that I am going to be talking about some uncomfortable things. I'm going to be talking about suicide ideology, about suicide itself, about some traumatic events and mental health in general. So if you are not in the right headspace or the right frame of mind, then please don't listen right now. That's not a problem. I won't be offended, and come back if you ever feel like you're up to listening to this. But that's what we're doing today. I have got myself a coffee. Don't worry if you are just listening to this over on, I think, Amazon or Apple. I'm pretty sure Spotify does have the video option, but you're really not missing anything. I've got no makeup on and I'm currently sitting on a stripped bed because, for those of you who follow me over on YouTube, you will know I have had COVID. I've actually been in this room for, I think this will be the 7th day. The reason for that is because the two people that we currently live in this house as well are my partner and his mum. His mum's extremely vulnerable, and my partner is vulnerable, but he has had it before and been okay, but he also has a job and work and doesn't want to get sick. So I've been just in here, but I've tested negative twice now. So I've stripped it, I've been spraying everywhere, cleaning everywhere when I went to the toilet and the bathroom, and fingers crossed, they've been fine and I should be clear now, but the bedding's in the wash. So you're really not missing anything not watching this video. But yeah, it's September, and September is Suicide Awareness Month. And I always feel a bit in two minds, to be honest, about suicide awareness and all of the other days. I think they're brilliant for bringing attention, but I also think it's easy then for people to generally forget it, and it's almost as if it's got a designated time and we'll all talk about it then and we'll all be supportive of it then. But what happened at the end of the month? Because suicidal people still exist. And I think this episode probably not even want to get out there, because I'm going to say suicide 150 times. Please share it if it doesn't, because otherwise the algorithm's going to hate me. But yeah, suicide, it's something that makes people feel uncomfortable, and talking about suicide can be uncomfortable for the listener and also for the person that's talking about it. I have personal experience with losing somebody to suicide, of someone I love attempting suicide, or a family member attempting suicide, and then attempting it myself. I'll start from the beginning, shall I? So when I was 6, I lost my nan to suicide. If I was 6, I can't remember exactly how old she was, but that memory of that day is one of the first true memories that I have. When I think back to when I was younger and I try to think of clear memories and me knowing exactly where I am, what I was doing, I could walk you. We used to live in a square, and at the end of the square, it was a traditional proper square, so you're driving in the square, there was the houses, and opposite where the opening of the square was our school, so it was really handy, just across the road. And I can remember my dad picking me up, which I thought was weird anyway. I was always one of those kids that picked little things up and carried that into my anxiety, but I remember thinking it was strange. I can remember and physically see in my head whether this is exactly how it happened and it's burned into my brain, or it's how I've remembered it over time. I remember walking with him across the square to our house and crying, because I either wanted to go to my nan's or had been meant to be going to hers. It was something to do with wanting to see her or to go to hers or to whatever it was. And he kept saying no, but he was acting odd. And even at six, I remember thinking something didn't feel right. Then I can remember going into the house. I remember going into the living room and my mum was sat on the living room. On the living room? She was sat in on the couch in the living room. And there's a dock that you can hear the dock sometimes from where I am. So that was what that was. It wasn't a fart or anything. So yes, she was sitting on the couch and I think I went upstairs crying upset and then I got shouted down. And I still remember to this day walking up to my dad and standing there with my little sister and him saying that your nan has passed away. And I remember saying, because I could look, I seen my mum and she was crying. She was really upset because at first I thought he was joking, but that's obviously like a defence. And then I said, I won't get upset. I'm not going to cry because that would be stupid. And unfortunately, that was kind of how I continued with my feelings into life. But I think what went on there was that I was worried that if I got upset, then that would upset people further because my mum was already upset. And I don't think I understood at the age of six. I mean, I say that as if every other six-year-old understands death, but I don't think I knew how to handle the fact that he was saying she was gone. And this was something that I found really interesting from the Lewis Capaldi and Diary of a CEO episode. He opened it up with a similar story about his mum losing his, I don't know if it was a grandma or a sister or somebody to suicide, and then somebody else, a dad at a young age. And he then spoke to a therapist years later and she said to him, he had health anxiety and other things. It could be because you were introduced to death and the fact that somebody isn't here forever and that things can happen and people can die. Maybe that's where some of the anxiety or the health anxiety comes from. And I found that really interesting. And I kind of feel like maybe not all of, because as we'll discuss further on in these podcasts, I have had quite a few traumatic events, to say the least, in my life. But maybe that's part of where some of my mental illnesses or come from, or my way of thinking. But that was my first experience with suicide. However, I didn't know it was suicide at the time. They told me and my sister, and my older sister, but she didn't live with us, so it wasn't at the same time, that she died in her sleep. She'd gone to sleep. I think they thought that was the nicest thing to have done. Something I find interesting, which we'll go into a bit more later, I'm all over the place, if you can even follow what I'm saying. But so we didn't know. But then my nan on my dad's side, so that was my mum's mum that died. My nan on my dad's side suffers with bipolar. I had already started, I think I kind of knew, because my mum was, she's not here anymore, but my mum was severely depressed for most of my life, up and down. So she wasn't always depressed, but when she was severely depressed. And I think I kind of put two and two together from a very young age, and I was one of those children that picked up on everything and kind of took that on internally. But I think I might have asked my nan, and she just told me. I'd asked her when she wasn't well. And then my younger sister, she just flat out came and told one day. But that was years later, which caused a bit of upset. Now, another thing that I relate into this specific incident was, and it goes back to what I was saying before about how suicide makes people feel uncomfortable, makes people feel uncomfortable. And my dad had actually, after her death, written letters to me, my sisters, my cousins that were alive at the time, and my little sister had found them one day. I mean, she ended up giving them to my two cousins, who went home, didn't open them, and then opened them around my uncle, and it caused quite a bit of an argument over the phone. But I think my dad had done that from a place of trying to help children understand why somebody would take their own life, why that person wouldn't want to be around anymore, or to show that they did love you, even though they made this choice, if that makes sense. Now, he never did give the letters. He was never intending to. I think that was something that he'd done early on and then just changed his mind. And obviously, Megan being... Oh, my sister... Oh, it doesn't matter. Megan being Megan had gone and give the letters to my cousins. But I found that so interesting now, looking back, that he felt he had to do that out of fear that we would wonder why she'd done it, or if she didn't love us. And that is interesting to me. But I think that is what happens a lot of the time. And my mum's depression and mental illness was 100% made worse by this action. But I don't blame my nan for doing what she did. Suicide, people think suicide is a moment, an action that is done. Whether they believe that someone plans it out over weeks, months, sometimes years, knowing exactly how they're going to do it, when they're going to do it, get all the ducks in a row, or people think that it's a spur of the moment, something terrible happens, or somebody's feeling really ill, or someone's had too much drink, too much of whatever, and then they make that decision just there, and unfortunately it's permanent, the life is over. But that is just one part of what it is to be suicidal. Somebody can be suicidal all their life but die of natural causes. And we have this strange opinion of what we put on people who say they're suicidal and people who actually are suicidal, and then people who attempt and don't manage to end their life. Now, I want to talk about all of them areas. And I myself have attempted multiple times across my life. And obviously, I used to say I failed, but now I say like, I survived, or it was an attempt. I don't like the word failed, because I feel I try to be a bit more positive about it now. But I definitely experienced this in school. I was bullied in school. I didn't really have many friends. I had acquaintances, and I had people I thought were friends, and then I had people who... I'll do another episode on its own about bullying in school, but I hated every single second of school, and I also hated most of every single second at home as well. It was horrendous. That time of my life, I would not live again. But I got here, we're through, it's fine. But I found when I was younger that in school, specifically in school as well, people viewed suicide... Everyone knew how serious suicide was because someone's dead. But if someone was to say they were suicidal, it was attention seeking. And if you were to, and this happens not just, I've heard grown adults say this to me, about other people. If they really wanted to kill themselves, they would have just done it. And how many times, if you actually think about it, have you seen that either written, tweeted, said? And that is exactly the problem with talking about suicide. If we look at the root cause of most of the embarrassment of coming out and telling people, it's because most of the time you're not taken serious enough, because you're not dead yet. And it's so sad. And it's, if you attempt and fail, you didn't attempt hard enough. Or people will say, oh, they knew that that amount of X wasn't going to do that, or, oh, they didn't really track. And it's as if the person that's talking about it, they're saying, oh, they failed, they didn't even try. But the end result is that somebody would not be here anymore. If somebody tells you that they are feeling suicidal, first of all, it doesn't mean that they're... When someone says suicidal, it doesn't mean they want to kill themselves right now. Do not act in that way. Do not automatically think like that person's not sick, that person's not ill. It's like with anorexia, what we see all the time, or eating disorders. You have to be sick enough. But sick enough is basically, you know, dying. It's so frustrating. But anyway, that's how people tend to see it. I think we are getting a little bit better about talking about it, but there's still so many people with them opinions that just because you have told them, you aren't really serious. And as I said before, suicidal doesn't mean imminent suicide. And I can tell you that from experience. You can have suicidal ideology, which I struggle with a lot, which is where you think about ending your life, you think about it, you might get images in your head constantly of doing it. I know that I've got BPD and other mental health disorders, and the thing I struggle with a lot is emotion control, not anger. In fact, I probably don't have enough anger. I struggle with confrontation. I used to be a complete doormat, but I am trying to work on it. But I can go from completely stable thinking, enjoying myself, having an okay time or a really nice time or an excellent time. One thing can happen, or there can be an apparent shift in the feeling of the room, people, something, one little tiny, and I sometimes do mean tiny thing, and my brain will instantly, without me even trying, go, kill yourself. And emotion comes with that thought. It's not just the thought in my brain and it flies past and I don't think anything of it. I can feel the pain of wanting to do that. I can feel the pain of what that would do to other people. I have OCD as well, and intrusive thoughts, and that's a whole other episode. But I can think about ending my own life 15 times a day. It doesn't mean I am planning to. It doesn't mean I am going to. It doesn't even mean I want to. That's suicidal ideology, suicidal intrusive thoughts. These are things that so many people suffer with on a daily basis. But that's still difficult to live with. Just because they don't want to or don't plan to kill themselves doesn't mean it's not hard to live with, or that they're not struggling, or that they don't deserve any help or support. And people should be able to talk about it. I think people get concerned that if they say to somebody, I've been thinking about suicide, instantly that person's like, lock them up, they need to go to the hospital, or, oh my God, how can we leave this person on their own? Oh, this person is a danger to themselves sometimes. Oh, this person's a danger to us. Oh, they're attention seeking. It holds such, it's such a heavy word. And I mean that in a literal sense of, it carries so much weight to throw that word around. And that is, I understand why, because obviously suicide is a serious thing that needs to be taken serious, but also sometimes the seriousness of the word and how people view it is a barrier to people being able to talk and get help. And sometimes that person who was not necessarily suicidal, but was suicidal in the way that people see it, ends up going months, weeks, years, constantly having these thoughts. Maybe it's OCD, maybe it's another disorder, maybe they just need a little bit of help. And eventually, because they haven't spoke to anyone about it, they do become a risk of actually ending their life, because they were too scared to talk to people because of how they might react. And there's nothing wrong with trying to support a friend who says this to you, but it's important to remember not everybody who has suicidal thoughts is about to jump off a building. And also, they don't want you to treat them like some sort of victim, because that in itself is hard. Yet they need support. They probably want you to listen to them. They might need you to point them in the right direction. They might need some assistance. Maybe they're too scared to tell the doctor and you can go with them. You can be support. But don't belittle them and talk down to them. They're still the same person. They're just somebody who's struggling, and they could have been struggling for a really long time. But treating them also like a ticking time bomb, probably not going to help the situation. Sorry, I just needed a drink. So, yeah, that was... So, suicidal definitely has a very heavy weight to it. Another thing that frustrates me about talking about suicide is that people can... Another thing that can be difficult that nobody really talks about is survivor's guilt. And I don't mean it in the terms of, say, when someone's in an accident and then somebody dies and you survive. And that's not that kind of survivor's guilt. But I know personally, and I remember specifically one time I had taken a bunch. So I, as I said, I had an eating disorder, I had OCD, I had severe depression, there was abuse and negativity going on at home, there was bullying going on at school, there'd been events that had happened to me, it was a shitstorm basically. And this one particular time, I still remember it, I was in my nan and granddad's, me and my sister were staying because something had happened. I don't remember exactly what time this was, but something had happened. We weren't at home, but we were going to school. School was a really, it was quite a distance to get from where we were going, where my nan and granddad lived, to our school. And I had wrote a, this is terrible. So I'd wrote, I don't know if I'd wrote the letter on my sister's laptop or I'd emailed her school email, but I was, if for all intents and purposes, I was not going to be here in the morning. I went into the bathroom. I took an OD of paracetamol and some other tablet. And I truly thought I just wasn't going to wake up. Now, you've got to remember, I was 15, maybe 14, 15. And took them. Went to bed. I'd wrote this thing that I wanted to get in the morning, and it's not funny, but I mean it must have been awful for her, and I have since apologized. But she basically, I woke up, so I was expected not to wake up, and I woke up, and I remember just being so upset. I was devastated that I'd woken up and I had to go on with this day. And I remember getting dressed. It didn't even occur to me that I'd wrote, because I completely forgot. I'd obviously been in a daze the night before, wrote this thing, and then I'd woke up unexpectedly and was just so devastated that I just completely, my mind was just blank. We get to school, and I'd probably been in school for about an hour, because we went to the same school at this point, and a teacher came and got me. And obviously Megan had found this note and had gone to this teacher, and then they told the head of our year. And I remember just, I mean, this definitely wasn't a surprise to them, because I was that kid that had all the stuff going on. So I doubt that they were surprised, but they didn't handle things very well. I think schools need a better training, better training on mental health, better training on self-harm, better training on how to deal with kids that are going through them and also recognising and dealing with effectively when a kid is living in an abusive household. Again, that's another episode, but I remember they were really angry at me and I was devastated because all I was thinking was, oh, she's read this and she was bawling her eyes out and it was horrendous. But I don't understand. I mustn't have told them that I actually had taken anything. I must have just told them that I wrote the note because they let me go. I left school that afternoon and went to a friend. I think I was too scared to go home. So maybe she'd come. No. So this is, Megan wasn't there. So my sister wasn't there. I'd gone with a friend. But during this period of time, I was getting in trouble all the time. And I knew that my mum was probably going to call the police to try and find where I was. But I was in a friend. And anyway, I ended up coming out with, because I started feeling unwell, the fact that I had took all them tablets. His mum was in there, she called the police and the ambulance, and I went into hospital. And I remember, there is a point to this, I remember lying in the hospital bed and almost feeling relieved because I thought, I'm not dead and maybe I'm going to get the support and help that I need now. And then my mum and dad turned up, or just my dad, and my mum was already there, whatever it was. And I remember my dad saying, where are the tablets? And I said, well, what? And he said, where are the tablets? Because you didn't take them. And I can't even explain how much that hurt that he'd said that. And I can understand he said it from a point of denial. He doesn't want to believe that his child's done this. But that is not helpful, and it wasn't helpful. I think I stayed in hospital for about a week, and there was like therapist thing. It wasn't great. Nothing was really done. But yeah, that it was. And then my point is the shame and guilt you have to live with after an attempt, and you don't, because you've got to deal with all these people and their emotions that you didn't expect to. And I know that does sound selfish. But if you are in a position where you feel like your only option is to end your life, you are not thinking rationally, because obviously you're going against all of your body's, everything that your body is programmed to do is keep you alive. So if you've got to the point where you feel like you are ready, checked out, and attempting to end your life, you're not thinking rationally. It's not selfish. And I feel very strongly about that, even from losing somebody and seeing how negatively it impacted my life. It's still not selfish. But anyway, you then have to deal with these people who, some people are angry at you. Some people are convinced it was an attention-seeking situation. Some people don't know how to speak to you. Some people are awkward. You have to answer so many questions from different people. And it's hard, like, to live after an attempt. Obviously, for most people, they end up being thankful and grateful that they didn't. Not everybody, unfortunately, but most people will end up grateful. But that time between the attempt and getting over the after effects of it is difficult, and I think we need to be a bit more forgiving of somebody who has attempted to do that and understand that they were not, that they're unwell, they're not in the right frame of mind. They probably think that what they're doing is the best, is better for you, better for everybody around them. Shaming them, berating them, being angry at them is not going to help. Treat them normally, but be there to talk to them. But that's something that I always wanted to talk about, because nobody really talks about it. You know, people talk about how sad it is losing people, and people talk about the miracle of surviving, but nobody really talks about how difficult it is to survive, and the guilt that you feel and the emotions that you take on and the shame attached to it. So that was something else that I did want to talk about. Another thing as well that I don't understand about when somebody tells someone that they are suicidal or somebody attempts suicide and doesn't die is when people say they're doing it for attention. But first of all, I mean, it's a pretty risky attempt at attention, because if it goes wrong or right, they've died. But also, even if the person was not trying to die, even if the person, you know, done the most pathetic cut or took the least amount of tablets possible, the fact they've done that, yeah, it's for attention, because they need help. I've never understood that when people say, oh, it's just for attention. Most people who do that need help, and even people who are doing it for attention need help, even if they don't know it. If you are somebody who has taken medication or attempted suicide or anything like that to because of a situation and you're trying to manipulate it, you need help also, because that's not normal behavior. But anybody who attempts it, regardless of the motive, needs support. They need help, they need therapy, they need treatment. So that whole thing of, oh, that's looking for attention, it needs to stop, because it's a stigma that shouldn't exist. Because even the worst type of people, there's somebody I know who attempted, or would say they were going to attempt, they didn't actually, but they would say they were going to attempt in a way to manipulate me, and it was emotional abuse. But them doing that, even them, they need help, because that's not normal. Not normal. It doesn't mean I have to stick around to help them, but it does mean that they need help, and I can recognise that. So never talk about somebody who has told you, or someone else, that they are suicidal, or that are have attempted it and not that they're attention seeking. Give them attention, the right kind of attention, and if you can't do that, don't comment on it. If you're somebody who just cannot get their head around suicidal people, mental health, anything, just don't comment. If you're not going to say something nice, don't say anything at all. And I think, especially around these situations, that is the best way to be. Tough love, no. Suicide, tough love. All of these antidotes that you get from your grandparents of, well, not in my day, or all these people with all these problems. I'm telling you now, my nan and granddad have got their own issues. I love them. My nan's severely bipolar. My granddad is mad. I mean, I love him with all my heart, but when he was younger and the way he was with his children, you were not okay. And passing that on generation after generation after generation, we don't talk about mental health, we don't talk about these things, it's taboo. Just get on with it, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And back in my day, and no, people always had mental illnesses, people were always sad, people had ADHD, autism, these existed, you just ignored them and it made the situation 100 times worse. It's not weak to attempt suicide, to talk about suicide. The strength it takes to come out and talk about it is what people should be talking about, not the fact that it's weak or that they need to get over themselves. So my point of this podcast today was to talk about suicide a bit more than just looking at people who've died or who've lost their life, because yes, it's awful, it's horrible, and it is devastating, but there's also so many sides to suicide and suicidal people. I'm really thinking about the fact that this video is just not going to get anywhere because I've said suicide so much, and I know that, but even that, like, saying that, the word can get you, your video just won't go anywhere on the internet. But what, how helpful is that? That is not helpful. People need to be able to talk about it. It shouldn't be taboo. it's not a there shouldn't even be taboo topics. There should be tact. People should be able to talk about these things tact, like, you shouldn't be rude to people, but there shouldn't be taboo topics, things we shouldn't talk about. You should be able to talk about everything, in my opinion, anyway. So I just wanted to talk about it. There's people who will struggle with suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideology. There'll be people who will be genuinely worried about suicide. There'll be people who may be attempting or have attempted, but it's not all the same. It doesn't look the same. And as well as, I think you already know, you can't tell if someone's suicidal by looking at them. It could be the happiest person in the room. It could also be the person that's on the floor in a ball. But have conversations, talk to people. If you're someone out there that does struggle with suicidal ideology or does struggle with suicidal thoughts, please let me know. If you listen to this on Apple Podcasts, please give it a like or a rating or a 5-star, wherever it is, because I'm pretty sure that's how it gets pushed out. If you're watching this on YouTube, then sorry about the empty bed. I hope you've enjoyed listening or watching. If you've got any other topics that you want me to talk about, please let me know. I've got so many ideas and so many things that I want to go through. If you enjoyed this on YouTube, please give it a thumbs up and share it so that it spreads to other people. But that is everything for now. So wherever that you are, I hope you have a lovely morning, day or night, and I will see you again next time. Bye.